And Hatem, are you using your new mic?
That's very fancy.
I mean, I say it's new. We've had it for like, I don't know, God knows how long. I've never actually bothered to plug it into my laptop. So today I actually did, and I was like, let's see if it makes any difference in terms of sound.
Is it really big or is it just really close to the camera?
No, it's actually unnecessarily big.
getting ready to drop his next LP.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like you know him already. And welcome to another fantastic episode of Somewhere in Between, the RCGP AIT and First Five podcast. I'm Mira and I'm here with Hatem and Johannes. Hi, guys.
Hello.
And we are going to be joined by some very exciting guests today. I've got Dr. Adam Thomas, who has literally just joined the podcast. I'll get him a minute to just settle in. And we also have Dr. Julia Darko and Dr. Harry Williams joining us. So if you don't know these names, you guys should do, especially if you're an AIT listening. These are indeed our outgoing and incoming AIT chairs. And we're just going to have a little chat with them today. And hopefully Dr. Sophie Lumley is going to be joining us later as well, just to hear what they've been up to this past year and what Julia and Harry are looking forward to be doing in the year ahead. So enjoy, sit back and listen to what we've all got to say. I guess my first question is, Adam, how does it feel CCT'd in the real world, GP, end of AIT chair? How are you feeling?
In one word, scary. It's weird having taken longer than most people to get to CCT, because I've done lots of sort of, you know, career enhancing things and things that I wanted to sort of spend my time doing. I've taken longer than the average sort of 3 years to get here, and but that does mean that you get used to being a trainee, and you always get used to being a trainee with someone sort of above you, if you like, in terms of sort of being able to you know, sort of keep an eye on you when you're sort of let loose out into the world. But yeah, these last couple of months as an autonomous practitioner, I have stayed at the practice I was an ST3 at, which I mean unless you don't like the practice you were an ST3 at, I would really recommend, because that means the transition has been probably a bit smoother than I would have been if I'd gone somewhere completely sort of fresh. So it means that, you know, I know the patients, I know the other doctors that work there, and to be fair, they've been absolutely welcome to me asking some questions if I get stuck, because fundamentally you don't suddenly know everything and are, you know, able to sort of practice completely autonomously the day after your CCT. So it's really good to find somewhere that's really supportive, because yeah, it can be a bit scary.
Absolutely. And I think what you're saying really resonates with me, remembering finishing one day you're a final year medical student, probably off on an elective. I remember I'd come back from Australia and then the next day on a ward and someone's asking me to prescribe warfarin, and I just sort of started panicking, being like, I don't know what I'm doing. So
there's absolutely
there's definitely an element of that. And it's interesting, Adam, you're talking about being a trainee for some time and having done other things. I guess, Hatem, you can sort of relate to that, having done a year out as well in training. Have you got any sort of questions for Adam?
Well, I think the biggest question really is what did you take away from the year as an AIT coacher, and how are you kind of planning to apply that going forward now you've finished your training?
So I think it's been an opportunity really to balance a role that's you know, where you're answerable to a group of people, in this case trainees, with actually still being that trainee yourself. So you get quite a lot of insight into what the issues that are, you know, that mean most to the trainees moving forward, and that's been really useful, because I've actually gone straight into a role as a TPD. So I've taken a post as a TPD in one of the local VTS schemes, which which I thought was a bit early when I initially was asked to go for the job. But actually, you know, with a few months hindsight in the role, having represented trainees and really got a grasp of what really matters to trainees at the moment, and also having done things like sat the RCA and I know what it takes to do that, I find that actually, you know, coupled with working alongside TPDs who have been qualified for decades, there's a lot to be offered, I think, for an early career TPD in terms of giving advice to people, advice to trainees sort of in that sort of aspect of things. So I don't think I would have been as confident or as able to perform that role had I not spent this last year really getting to grips with what matters to trainees.
I mean, that's very impressive, Adam. And also TPD in first year, you're a braver man than I am, but that's absolutely amazing. I guess one of the things I wanted to ask you is, obviously, this year went with lots of challenges. And I know the year before, obviously, was the first peak of COVID and a swift change in exams. But also you and Sophie had to deal with multiple questions from the AIT network about exams, about lots of different things. I suppose the question that I wanted to ask was, what did you find the most challenging about the role? But also, what were the highlights?
So in terms of the challenges, it's most certainly was trying to fit everything in. So being representative on all the different meetings, committees that were required, I certainly would not have been able to do it by myself as a full-time trainee. So I was extremely fortunate, one, that Sophie had asked me to run with her, but also that Sophie was an academic trainee, so did have a bit more flexibility around her time. Otherwise, I don't think we could have given as much to the role as we did. So certainly being representative across the whole spectrum of places we needed to be representative was a challenge. But as the year went on, you know, we had some really faithful people turn up to the network catch-ups, and therefore we were able to then identify people that were just as passionate as us, you know, had lots to give to some of the other sort of committees and other sort of areas that we needed to be representative. And so then we were able to delegate and have, you know, the trainee voice represented by other people in some ways. So that was definitely a challenge. The workload came in sort of peaks and troughs. So obviously when there was lots of discussion and concern around mainly the exams, there was a lot of correspondence to get through, a lot of views. And I suppose and Sophie as well, we're just keen to make sure that we try to answer everybody, or at least make everybody feel that their opinion was heard. And that can be difficult when, you know, you've got over 13,000 trainees, not that they were all getting in touch at once, but that's a lot of opinions and queries and concerns that we need to try and get to grips with. But they largely all clump together into themes. So, you know, again, with the benefit of hindsight, it was easy to see that there were a couple of issues that were really important to trainees, especially around shielding, especially around representation, especially around how the exams were going. And I feel we were able to get a good sort of grasp of that and take those opinions to the people that needed to hear them. In terms of the highlights, there's been loads. I mean, I everybody says, oh, it's such a shame that you had to do the role sort of virtually. I don't think that Sophie and I would have been able to carry out the role had it not been during the pandemic and we had to be down in London as often as we would have been. So I think it did actually open up the opportunity to people that weren't so London based to be able to represent trainees from sort of further afield. And especially when it comes to being so rural, because I mean, I work in an extremely rural practice, and I don't think that opportunity would have been so easy to take up had we had to be doing it face to face. But other than that, it's been a fantastic opportunity to network. We've met some amazing people. We've managed to meet the legend that is Chris Whitty, which has been a fantastic experience to chat to him. We've met up with the chairs of lots of the other Royal Colleges to widen our experience of what postgraduate medical education is like across the board. You know, there's been huge opportunities, really. And obviously, most of all, just being able to represent trainees, making sure that at least hoping that we've got our finger on the pulse of what matters to them, and being able to take those issues to the college and hopefully, you know, coming out with some tangible outcomes, really.
And just on that subject of, you know, now that co-chairing is kind of the sexy new way of doing the RCGP AIT chair, how did you and Sophie work together? How did you kind of divide up? Did you divide and conquer, or did you work together on everything? What was your approach?
I think the co-chairing aspect is really, really important. And that's why I'm so glad Harry and Julia are also co-chairing. I think it makes a huge difference if you come at this role where two of you know each other and you've worked together before. Obviously,
you know, Harry and Julia know each other very, very well. I worked with Sophie for many years before we went for this role. We knew that we worked well together. We knew what each of our personalities brought to the table and what our strengths and weaknesses were. So certainly we would sort of tackle, you know, almost on a week-by-week basis, what meetings that we needed to attend, you know, what was coming into the inbox, and sort of, you know, would have a bit of a debrief really as to what needed to be achieved, you know, in the short, mid and long term, and try and plan in that respect, really, how to do things. Certainly being a full-time trainee meant that during the day, my time was unless I sort of took study leave or it was on the sort of VTS day where I had another half day off, it was difficult for me to attend, you know, as many meetings as I wanted to. So again, you know, very, very lucky that Sophie had the sort of flexibility of time because of her academic job to be able to attend more of those things than I was able to. But certainly, you know, when I was able to, it was fantastic to get an idea of how the college is divided up, how it sort of approaches different aspects of our training, and try and be representative.
I mean, and I think you and Sophie definitely did a really great job over this past year, especially speaking out to all the trainees, trying to get that network up and running, because obviously that was a new structure that hadn't really been used before as well. And obviously the power of having a co-chair, which obviously Julia and Harry will come and speak to you about that co-chair aspect in a little bit. I guess one of the questions I did want to touch upon, Adam, is for Julia and Harry, did you have any pearls of wisdom or any advice that you wanted to give them in the upcoming year, or what are the main things that the trainees are looking for in this year? You will have got a sense of that over your tenure as AIT chair.
Yeah, so a bit like what I said just now, and I'm sure you will. It's getting a bit of an overview to begin with of all the different sort of factors and different aspects of sort of college, of how the Royal College approaches training, and sort of all the different meetings that you need to be representative at. And once you've got an idea of that, once you've gone to your sort of first of all of those meetings, you get a good idea of what can be achieved and why each of those different meetings and committees exists. And so what I would say then is that the way that the trainees sort of communicate with us is mostly sort of either by email or on the Slack channel more rarely via social media. But you do get an idea then by putting your contact details out there, you get an idea of what the issues that matter most are. And certainly throughout our year, it's the majority of problems have been around assessments. And I don't think that will change. I think now the RCA is a bit more embedded and sort of changes are going to be a bit less frequent, we hope, then hopefully sort of the number of problems that will arise won't be quite so many, but you know, who knows what's going to come in the future. So yeah, I would just sort of as I said earlier, just sort of keep abreast of what's coming into the inbox. You'll see themes that come up, but also don't lose sight of the reasons that you became the co-chairs in the first place. So you had your manifesto, you had your the things that you wanted to bring to the role. So just make sure that you don't lose sight of that, because it's easy to get bogged down in the sort of day-to-day running of the college and sort of attending meetings and answering queries and emails. But just make sure that you do set some time aside to work on those issues that mean the most to you.
And almost like magic, Adam's perfect other half of co-chair has arrived in terms of Sophie. So welcome, Sophie, to the podcast. Thank you for coming. I know you've had an extremely busy day. But one of the things I did want to say, but I was going to wait till both of you came together, is I think congratulations are in order, not only for you both being in the real working world of GP, but I hear that both of you got an award at the Inspire Awards last week at the RCGP conference. Is that right, Sophie? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, thanks, Mira. And sorry, I'm running a bit late. Real life GP doesn't run on time. It's a real unfortunate eventuality. Someone kindly nominated Adam and I for an Inspire Award. And the college runs Inspire Awards every year and usually announce the winners at the annual conference. And they're meant to celebrate volunteers in the college, of which the co-chair AIT role is one of them. So we won the award. It's named AIT or AITs of the Year for our support and work towards trainees and improving their training experience through the year. But I would really encourage people that when the email arrives about Inspire Awards, which will be around just before the next conference is due, is to look through the nomination options and nominate friends, colleagues, mentors who have improved your training experience and improved the lives of other GPs, because it is really nice thing to receive an award or even be nominated. But yeah, it was a great celebration.
Thanks for that, Sophie. And I think one of the other things that we were asking Adam about, who's talking about your tenure in the year as co-chair, how he couldn't have done it without you, how you manage the workload together. And obviously you're handing the mantle on to two co-chairs as well. And we asked Adam for his sort of pearls of wisdom. What sort of pearls would you have for Julie and Harry? I suspect they might be similar, but it'd be lovely to hear from you.
Yeah, so I think the nice thing about it being a co-chair role is that you hear lots of people say that leadership can be quite lonely. And a lot of it is, I suppose, making a call on things. So you can never go and canvas views from every single AIT. They're all 13,500 of them. So actually, when you're asked something and you've got an acute timeline to reply to it, actually having someone that you can bounce ideas off, who's able to come and be aware of the same meetings and decisions that you are, is really, really valuable. You go to a lot of meetings and there's lots of information shared, and being able to just sort of debrief about things with someone who's on the same page is really helpful. I think it's probably more fun than doing on your own. We think, well, that was one of the reasons that we ran together. And particularly if you've got different viewpoints or different ways of operating, having a pair is can be complementary. What other tips or pearls of wisdom? Be organized, sort of stay on top of the inbox. Adam and I organize our inbox. Our approach to inbox organization is quite different. But the quicker you sort of get used to how the other person operates, I suppose, the better. And making sure that you both sort of don't get bothered when you're on annual leave and stuff is really helpful. Difficult for you guys, because you're probably going to be on annual leave together, but it is nice knowing that there might be somebody else. Yeah, maybe you'll want a break from each other by the time. But yeah, I mean, it's a valuable experience. It's a really valuable networking opportunity. And it's unique in its access to high level echelon people within the college. And I think you'll have a really great year now that things are beginning to open up and the opportunity for face to face is there. It's very convenient doing things virtually, but it's not really a surrogate for really getting to know some of the people that you're working with at Central College.
Great. So now that we've got the Fab Four fully assembled and I think ready to go, just to welcome Julia and Harry to the podcast again. It's lovely to see your faces. Julia, you. We know from the King's VTS, but Harry, you are a wonderful new face for me. So lovely to meet you.
Thank you.
So congratulations again to both of you for getting the position of AIT co-chairs. And just to kick things off, would you like to tell me how has it been since you heard that you've got the position?
Well, it has been very interesting, and certainly we are trying to learn the ropes, and there's a lot to take in. I think as Adam and Sophie have pointed to, you suddenly feel like you're being flooded with like invitations to meetings and lots of papers and, you know, lots of things to read through and to get up to date with. But it's been really exciting as well, actually. I think one of the first meetings that we attended as guests, kind of very much like within a few days of being told that we had been elected, was the council meeting, which is, you know, the sort of the big meeting, and, you know, everybody was there. And suddenly we were like, oh my goodness, this is huge.
Why did you let yourselves in?
So yeah, that it's felt like that. It's felt really eye-opening, actually, as a trainee, to see just how much is going on behind the scenes, how involved people are, how complex the structure of the college is. And yeah, I can't say that I've got my head around all of it just yet, but certainly finding it really fascinating. Yeah.
I mean, I'd agree. It's been really exciting, actually. I think number one, it's been really exciting kind of hearing from people, and people have been really warm and really kind of given us a lot of congratulations, and that's been really nice. We spent some time with Adam Sophie, and we had a bit of a meeting, so they gave us a bit of a lowdown on you know, some hot tips and things to look out for and things to kind of plan and where to kind of focus our energies. And I think mostly we're just really, really excited to get stuck in and to get working and getting to know people in the college and finding our feet as well. So yeah, we're really, really excited to be starting.
And I think Adam's point earlier about the importance of kind of keeping in mind your manifesto pledges and trying to keep this role as something where you're getting something and you're making change that you want to make. What are the kind of key things that you would like to achieve in the next year?
For me, I think the word just representation really comes to mind in many ways. I think the reason actually I was drawn to sort of run for this position was out of, I think, sometimes just frustration as a trainee that you don't necessarily understand how things work, who are the decision makers, and you know, and it can be really easy to feel sort of frustrated and to have a good moan. I'm really good at that. But I thought, actually, you know, what can you do about it? How can you make things feel more accessible for trainees? How can you, you know, sometimes I think as a trainee, the RCGP just feels very sort of ivory tower-esque and, you know, kind of what do they even do? What's their role? How can I get the most out of my membership as a trainee? And I really, one, wanted to understand how things operate behind the scenes to then be able to exploit that for the benefit of trainees, to be frank. You know, I really felt a sense that I wanted myself and other trainees to feel like we were able to get the most out of our membership and have our voices heard at the decision-making table, to feel like we could, you know, influence things in a way that felt more tangible, particularly as the landscape feels like it's shifting really fast at the moment and things are changing and evolving in a way that actually the future of general practice looks like it might be very different to what we thought it might be when we first applied. So it feels like, yeah, there are opportunities to really kind of mold things, and it's important for trainees to get the chance to be involved in that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we both thought it's a really interesting time for general practice. I think obviously we're coming out of a pandemic and, you know, it seems impossible to have these conversations without referencing COVID, unfortunately, but it has really changed the way in which we practice medicine. I know I've just come from my GP placement and we were doing remote consultations and using telephone triage and typically skills that were not introduced into the curriculum until much later on or into ST3. And now they're kind of commonplace skills that are from day one. You need to be able to be on top of those kind of things. And just the way in which the skill mix of the GP now is so different from the skill mix 18 months ago. Mm-hmm. And being able to change and adapt and being very flexible with your time and your efforts and your energy and adapting to electronic triaging and triaging the workload and the caseload, which is rising. So all of those kind of things also really played into our thinking. And we really wanted to work out, I think, as Julia said, you know, being really pragmatic, what can we do to be part of that training program and part of that system, and working with our colleagues and the other trainees as we go through it personally, as we experiencing ourselves as trainees directly. And then how can we stand in those places and in those meetings as well, and share our own views as well as the views of all of our colleagues who are going through it too. So I think with all of those things in mind, I think representation, I think Julia's right. That's the number one thing we wanted to do. And speaking up for people to give people a chance to feel like they're really being heard.
I mean, you've definitely got a big year ahead and some great goals. And I think a lot of people listening will be all for that as well. And I guess one of the big main things about being AIT co-chairs is utilizing that RCGP AIT network around you. And we know that Adam and Sophie held regular meetings to try and keep trainees in the loop and tried and shifted and changed different things to see what would work and what wouldn't work. I'd actually be quite interested just to go to Sophie, just to ask her about, you know, coordinating those meetings, speaking to trainees from different, you know, different parts of the country, but also the devolved nations, because there is that thing. We want to speak for all the trainees, but there's different rules depending on where you are as well. And trying to balance to, you know, provide a balanced view, but also appreciating sometimes we have no real power, I guess. Sophie, how did you find that, speaking to trainees and representing everyone?
I think it's really difficult with some things. So with some things, it really is quite different in different places. With a lot of stuff, it's actually very similar, and a lot of gauging views. Actually, the views that you were hearing in your own VTS were pretty much comparable to views that we were hearing from other places in the country, particularly related to exams, COVID pressures, sort of requirements for MRC GP and the stresses of training to be a general GP in general. But there are some things that are quite different. So for example, I hadn't realised that with the changes in urgent and unscheduled care from the college requirements in England, actually there wasn't necessarily an out-of-hours requirement for most places as a mandatory thing. That's different in the devolved nations. It's written differently in their contract. I don't know the details, but it's important to understand that when you're sort of then sending stuff out via the college, which is ultimately because a lot of meetings are very, very sort of England-centric and they've got lots of links with the Health Education England, it's just important to make sure it's the same for all trainees. But I suppose it ebbs and flows in terms of attendance at those sorts of meetings and trainees. It's a lot to give up people's evenings, and people come when they've got something particular they want to find out about or they want to contribute to. And we have times where we had some really good representation from devolved nations and all around the country, and times when lots of people were doing exams and there was lots going on, or there wasn't actually that much new novel information people thought there was to discuss, where you get less representation. But I think having a co-chair, being locally a rep, so you get the ideas of what's happening in your own deanery, and you're hearing about issues quite quickly, having your ear to ground on issues coming up on Twitter. I'm still part of that old Telegram group. I don't contribute, but it just means that if there's anything big that pops up, then you've just got an eye on anything that that might cause an issue. And you can just bring it up with the right person at college to try and preempt something that might cause a problem from trainees. It's a balancing act. You've got to canvas enough views so you feel you can be representative, but sometimes you just need to make a decision quite quickly, or you're asked something on the spot and you've got to go with what you feel would make most sense for the trainees that you've spoken to previously or that you work with.
Sophie, we heard from Adam earlier about how the year as the AIT co-chair and his final year in training has obviously had a big impact on what's happened since he's finished his training. And of course, he now has this wonderful, inspiring TPD role. I guess the same question to you, what aspects of the year have you taken forward now you have, you know, are at the end of your training or finished your training in terms of what's next for you and what do you hope to sort of, well, take forward in your career going, you know, in the long run as well?
Yeah, I think it opens your eyes into what college involves and what opportunities there are in college, certainly. You obviously get very involved in GP education because it's the thing at the forefront of most trainees' minds. I've started as a TPD as well. It's a sort of a bit of a thing that we've both doing locally, but I suppose they were doing a bit of a recruitment drive, and I do think there's a role for having someone who's recently been through training to support trainees going through it. And I suppose that's part of the point of the first five fellowships. So I'm a six-session salary GP, which is great because I think six sessions is enough to really get into the swing of things in a practice, but not feel like your whole life is dominated by clinical work, and gives you a bit of flexibility to do other things. And then I'm a TPD two sessions, and then I'm doing one of the GP fellowships locally. And I suppose one thing that Adam and I are still keen to sort of shape, because it's something that we had an idea to do through the AIT co-chairship, but I think as we become first fives, it becomes more relevant and something that we can get our teeth into, is this idea about renaming and reframing portfolio careers and increasing career support for GPs. Because I think portfolio careers get a bad name, but pretty much every GP you talk to has some degree of portfolio career. They don't see undifferentiated patients in a community setting 24/7, 5 days a week. They do out of hours, they have clinical interests, they have non-clinical interests, they work in different settings. And I suppose we've got a real passion for helping to showcase some of what different GPs do. And I think one of the challenges from the conference that actually came up in several different settings, but particularly in question time, was that to actually define to the public what GPs do, make it clear what our role is as expert generalists, but also all the different aspects of the job, and why we are so busy and why the profession is very overworked, but also the sort of diversity of careers and how different GPs do lots of different things, and which can really enhance that patient experience.
I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. And one of the things when we were talking about the podcast, Hatim, Johannes, myself, and when we could meet pre-pandemic, it seems like a lifetime ago, was sort of what kind of podcast did we want? What kind of information did we want to give out to trainees? And Sophie, I think you've hit the nail on the head. As trainees, as you know, that may have other businesses, that have other interests, that have other things going on, that carries you through first five and through your mid-career and into your later and early retired career. I met so many GPs at the last conference that have so many different hats, and it's about hearing about those experiences and hearing about the opportunities that exist all across the country in varying forms and shapes, but also how we can bring good practice to other areas. So definitely we'll be getting Sophie and Adam back on the podcast at some point to hear about more of their first five involvement, because this is a podcast for AITs and first fives. I think I've said the word podcast enough, so I'm going to direct my next question to Julia and Harry. And I guess we alluded to it a little bit earlier on, saying obviously you're co-chairs from an AIT perspective, but you're also co-chairs in a life perspective. So what kind of gave you the guys the idea to run into this role and, you know, spend all your time together? Tell us a bit about that.
So I think Sophie and Adam actually explained perfectly earlier, you know, the fact that they've worked together before, they know each other pretty well, and they know their strengths and weaknesses, and they know how best they can complement each other. And we've been married for 4 years. We have a baby, we have a daughter, and we know those things about each other really well. We know what our strengths are, what our weaknesses are. We know how to best complement each other in kind of life. So we think we do a really good job at that kind of building something together and working together during this time over the next coming year. Julia's less than full-time training, and I'm full-time training. Julia's academic. I'm not part of the academic program, so we feel like together we share like quite a broad range of a lot of trainees' experiences as well. Mm-hmm. And we felt that was a real strength, that we could kind of speak really on behalf of people with a kind of doing all sorts of things in their training.
Yeah. And I think also, like, we genuinely have a shared passion for general practice, which is really nice. Obviously, it's not enough that we're both doctors married to each other. We decided to do the same training program too. It just means that when we come home, we share a lot about our working day. And also meant that we shared things, you know, that were frustrating us about the program, but also things that we were really pleased about. Or, you know, we have a lot of conversations that are kind of like about kind of bigger picture things, you know, things that we aspire to, things that we're inspired by. So we knew that we could keep each other kind of motivated in this role, because we just have a sort of deeper passion for this that we share together, and that, you know, we can communicate quite easily with one another. So yeah, it was about having that kind of shared sort of vision and passion for the role. But also, it's quite convenient. We live together, so we don't need to send emails to each other or, you know, kind of chase each other in that way. And we can work quite flexibly around what we need to do, which obviously has some downsides, because it might mean that, you know, our role and the work associated with it could creep into kind of family time more than is probably wise. But for me, and for the life stage that I'm in, particularly kind of working less than full time, you know, both of us being parents and things, it just felt like the only way we could do this role was one, if we did it together and we were sharing it, but also if we shared it flexibly, you know, so not, you know, just communicating kind of in hours, that type of thing, that would be quite restricting for us. So it was just, yeah, the flexibility, but also knowing each other, knowing our limits, knowing how we can work together. And then obviously the passion that we have for representing trainees in you know, an area that we really are kind of dedicated to. Yeah. So, yeah.
And for those of you who are obviously listening and can't see what we can see on a screen, obviously Julia and Harry have signed in from the same laptop. You can see the co-chair is working already. And I guess one of the things we talked about was sort of inspirational, looking forwards. And I'm very aware that Adam has to leave soon because he's a busy man. He's got a meeting coming up. But I suppose, Adam, I just wanted to ask you one last question in terms of, obviously, GP at the moment, it's you hear that word, and a lot of the times at the moment feels like a little bit of a heart sink with everything that's going on. But what's keeping you going, Adam? What's giving you that get up and go in the morning, wanting you, you know, you're there like, yes, I'm a GP and I'm really here for it?
Well, funny enough, I was discussing that with one of the partners in my practice just now. And actually being at the RCGP conference just last week, the last 2 days, has been really... It was just a really nice experience to be in just surrounded by people who are being really positive about general practice. And, you know, I was having that conversation on the back of the fact that the practice over the last couple of weeks, I'm sure sharing with every practice across the country, you know, more than our fair share of you know, patients that aren't happy with the way things are going, that aren't happy with the way the sort of, you know, agreeing with the media that they want to be seen face to face, sort of more than they are, and sort of venting those frustrations on us. It was really, really nice to sort of see people being really, as Julia said, really passionate about general practice and sort of advocating for the career and really highlighting what makes us. You know, the what makes the profession the bedrock of the NHS, really. So yeah, that gave me a lot of get up and going. It was and actually, before I went, I thought, you know, 2 days at a conference, I'm not sure how excited I am about this. But actually, it was a really, really good experience to see, you know, that there are people out there that are still really passionate about the job and can really sort of and can still see how general practice is going to flourish into the future. So that gave me a lot of get up and go. But also, yeah, I think, you know, we're at the beginning of our journey. So you know, I qualified in 2012. So it's been 9 years of training in various different guises and various different fellowships and years out and things. And actually, this is the sort of beginning of the rest of my career, really, the rest of my life. So it's quite exciting to already have another element to it, like in the form of the CPD role. And education is something I've always wanted to incorporate in my career. But also, I'm just looking forward to getting sort of patients under my belt and cutting my teeth as a real GP on my own out there in the big wide world, really.
Thank you so much, Adam. I know you have to run off. So thank you very much for your participation. We're obviously going to keep going for a little bit longer. So please keep listening to some more excellent questions. I think Johannes has got something queued up.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's great to hear from Adam about, you know, just it's great to hear some excitement from GP, from new GPs, because a lot of the time, you know, we like to grumble in our roots. So it's great to hear some of the exciting things that we can look forward to. So Sophie, is there anything that you would recommend for trainees who are kind of feeling a little bit inspired by this conversation, people who want to get involved in things like the RCGP or just other trainee activities that they might not be aware of?
Yeah, so I think training is very short. And I would prioritise getting through MRCGP. And it's difficult sometimes to balance sort of exams and turning up for work and portfolio stuff with doing other things. And I would strongly advocate that do lots of other things, but make sure that you get through your own training, because repeating exams and have the stress of trying to balance too many different things is a lot. So I suppose that's a bit of a health warning, because sometimes things like this do take up a lot of your free time. But there's different levels you can get involved in terms of like HE education, trainee representation, and the college. So most VTSs have their own representative, and and they'll organise local junior doctor forums, go to the area GP education meetings, liaise with the local faculty AIT teams, and that's a really great place to start. So if you're keen to represent, get involved in your own VTS, there'll be representatives, or if there isn't one, offer to be one and then link up with the local regional team. Then there's the regional faculties. There's usually at least one AIT rep. Sometimes there's a full committee for each RCGP faculty. And it works really well when the faculty is well linked with the head of school and the HE team that look after your training in your deanery. And then if you're interested in getting involved in national stuff, which is generally people who already represent the trainees locally or regionally, because then you already are cited on trainee issues and have a network of people to go to, then I get involved in the national network. Now, it's Julia and Harry's sort of remit now in how they want to organise things, but it's sometimes a bit difficult to work out how to find the national AIT network, and I'm sorry that it's hidden in the website. It's certainly not deliberate. But the best way to find it is if you go to the Celebrate page on the RCGP website. Scroll down, there's a video about getting involved that Adam and I have done, and underneath it there's a link to an expressions of interest form. If you complete that, it populates and sends a form to Julia and Harry and one of the admin team at the college, which will allow you to get the details if you want to get more involved in the national AIT network. But I'm going to leave it to these guys and how they want to organize their network and engage with trainees, because it's different depending on what the issues are and who you need to go to. But I think if you're keen in sort of leadership and getting involved, there's loads of opportunities. So every area's got an LMC, a local medical committee, which is a BMA organisation, but there's generally a trainee rep on that, and if there isn't, then there certainly should be an opportunity to get involved. There's obviously local and regional BMA representation through JDC and feeding into GPC. There's local LNCs, it's the local trust. There's all sorts of different opportunities. And if you've got a sort of specialist interest, then get involved in the Primary Care Society for whatever that is. So there's a Primary Care Society for Diabetes, there's the Faculty of Sexual Health, there's the Medical Women's Foundation, there's all sorts of stuff. And the best way to find out about it is to look at your emails, because these people love to send emails about all sorts of stuff, and talk to people who inspire you locally and see what they do.
It's a really interesting landscape, isn't it? There's just so much you can do as a trainee and really get involved with quite early on. When I was an SD1, that's when I became my representative for my training program at Health Education England. I only joined the AIT committee later as a SD2, but it's been fascinating being involved in those roles. You learn a lot of skills, you get to meet some really, really cool people and learn from them too. And it's a great experience to take forward in whatever you do in your future career. There's also some wonderful opportunities like the National Medical Directors Clinical Fellowship, which Sophie and Adam both did, and I did as well, and Anthony, of course, who hopefully will join us soon, did too. So and that's currently out for advert, so that's something that you're interested in. Please look out for that on the Faculty of Medical Leadership and Management website. Harry and Julia, when you guys came on the call and you were in the same room, I didn't realize that you're a husband and wife, so that's very cool. And I do feel like you might actually be sharing a chair in true co-chair fashion.
It's just one chair.
So that's also very impressive. I've got a question for you, because as you now get settled into the role, over the next couple of months, this is, you know, these kind of media, the opportunity to sort of get your message out there and reach trainees is invaluable. What would you want trainees to know about sort of what your plans and also just generally about yourselves over the next few months?
So I think something that would be really important for us, it would be for trainees to have a better understanding of the role of the RCGP, so the college, and how they can tap into the resources available within the college to, share their views, air their concerns, and have those taken seriously, and then shape actions and outcomes, really. So I think that would be really key. So maybe perhaps within that, creating or recreating some sort of communication pathway, in a sort of a two-way format, that meant that one, we were able to engage trainees more, but also trainees would be able to have better access to understanding what's available within the college for them.
Yeah, so I think I know Sukh and Adam were using Slack, and we are thinking of, along the lines of how best to reach out to people as well. So I know that really worked for those guys. So we want to look for a way in which we can get people to contact us, so that people know that we are approachable. People, they can have our email address, so they can contact us via there, and we can be able to share their views from there. And also a way in which we can just contact the network. So we'll be planning and I'll soon to be organizing the first network meeting with ourselves chairing. So we want to, that will certainly be a place in which people want to kind of bring their views or share their opinions or experiences so far. So definitely echoing what Sophie said, if you want to get involved, then please do reach out, get in touch, get in contact with the network and start from there, and we will be really, really keen to hear from you. So I'd probably say get involved. It would be my message, because we'd love to hear if there are things you think can work better, if there are things that are being done locally that you think are fantastic, and that if you're not aware they're being done elsewhere, then we'd love to be able to help kind of bring that to the attention of people and to get that rolled out more widely, if that's really positive.
Mm-hmm. Something else that I think as well would be really close to our hearts would be to really raise the morale. I think because of various things, the press, the kind of other sort of challenges that we're facing as a profession, there is something about the climate that just does not necessarily feel as exciting as a general practice trainee at the moment. But then, as similar to what Adam said about, attending the RCGP conference, when you're then surrounded by pretty inspirational figures within the profession, suddenly you remember why it is you signed up to this. Suddenly you understand why it's such an exciting prospect, why it's a brilliant career. And then it just kind of just, refreshes that sort of energy and passion for it. So if in some ways we can find, ways of generating that. And we have some ideas. I don't want to share too much just yet because they're not set in stone yet. But we're just really thinking through some sort of creative ideas about how we can just generate a little bit more enthusiasm within the training network, and ensure that kind of just feeds through all of the training kind of areas and groups and schemes.
I think that's such an important point. I think a lot of the time we feel quite guilty that we're in such a fun career, because we want everyone in the public to see us as very serious. We're working hard every day, we're not having fun. And I think that takes away from the fact that it is a really flexible career. You can work less than full time. You can do all of these fantastic things. But I think we have to kind of get away from this feeling that we have to convince the public that we're very kind of very serious, very kind of suffering professionals. I think it's a really tricky balance. And I'm really, really glad to hear that that's something you're taking on.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. And I think there's something to be said about the theme being get involved, boost morale, and we're actually all picked a pretty great career and there's lots of opportunities out there, and we want to watch this space for all the great ideas you guys have. And I can say for myself, I'm really looking forward to the first meeting you guys do chair. Now, I'm really aware that we've all been talking for some time. Sophie's husband's ready for her to have some dinner, as I'm sure all of us are as well. So once again, I really want to thank you all. So Julia, Harry, Sophie and Adam, for all your contributions. We really look forward to seeing everything that Sophie and Adam get up to, probably hearing back from them in a couple of months about how life is as a TPD. That would be a great episode, I think, but also we'll be checking in with you, Julie and Harry, as well, just to see how things are going on, how we can get your word out, and mainly getting trainees involved. And of course, I'm thanking my co-hosts Hatim and Johannes. So that's it for another episode of RCGP Somewhere in Between, and we will see you next time. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
was just going to say that I had fun at work today because it was caterpillar cake.
Oh, yes, the best. Which one?
The best.
Which one is really important?
I can't possibly advertise which one.
That means it wasn't Colin, Sophie. We're just going to put that in the edit.